Mike McEntee. Here's the danger with forecasting, is you could be wrong. Right now, a lot of people are forecasting a blue wave because Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House, said that he is not going to run again. He's going to retire. And that is a lot of people saying, hey, there's going to be a blue wave. This is an indication that Paul Ryan has read the tea leaves and understands that the election is not going to go the Republicans' way, and he wants to get out of there. And then the other forecast, and this one I hope is wrong, is that we're going to get a foot of snow this weekend. I was just looking at maps here from the National Weather Service. Brett, I missed your forecast. I don't know if you mentioned it. But there's snow in the forecast, and they're saying that we could get up to a foot or more in the Twin Cities.
The problem with those forecasts, though, is that they release like 14 of those models. And if you choose the worst one, you can always say you're going to get like a foot of snow.
Well, yeah, this is depressing. I mean, the first one's uplifting. The first forecast is uplifting, and this one is depressing. I don't know if they quite cancel each other out today, but I am not looking forward to this weekend. I mean, we've got congressional district conventions that we got to get, you know, cameras to and coverage done and all sorts of things happening. And if we're going through a foot of snow, I hope it just melts real quickly. That's all I can say.
Put the snow tires on.
Snow tires.
In April.
Yeah, right. We've got a lot to talk about today. And if you haven't been paying attention, Donald Trump is warning Russia to, quote, get ready for a missile attack on its ally Syria, suggesting imminent retaliation for last weekend's suspected chemical weapons attack. Joining me to talk about U.S.-Russian relations and the Trump administration in general is former CIA officer, international expert, and trial lawyer Jack Rice. Hi, Jack. Welcome to the program.
Great to be with you again, Mike. Thank you so much.
Good to have you on here. There is so much to talk about. I want to start here, though, with the impending war that Trump seems to be wanting to have here with Russia or a surrogate through Syria. You've watched what's going on. What's your take on what's happening?
And when I keep watching the president's behavior, one of the things that comes to mind is he may have negotiated a lot of deals in boardrooms. And typically when he's negotiated those deals, he's the biggest dog in the room. And as a result, he's crushed a lot of people smaller than him, negotiated deals with them, and then walked away and left them holding the bag. I mean, that has happened again and again. The real problem that I'm seeing right now is we see these tweeting comments and these other sort of ridiculous from-the-hip statements that sound like you're a junkyard dog or a bully or something. But the real problem that comes with those is that we're talking about real death here. We're talking about war here. We're talking about really horrific ramifications. And so when you start just tossing things out there from the hip without seemingly even talking to the people who actually know what they're doing here, my concern is that this president has decided, you know, this is what I do, this is what I am. Problem is he has never shifted into the man in the Oval Office that everybody sort of hoped he would, even if you disagreed with him. He's never done that. He's continued to be exactly who he is. And the problem is he's not the one who could pay the price if this goes south. It's going to be literally everybody around him.
Now, here in the U.S., we've kind of gotten used to, and I'm unfortunately that's the case, and it's become normal now for the president to just, you know, issue threats that, you know, we know he's probably not going to follow through on, or that are hollow, or that, you know, we know that he doesn't, you know, he just can't mean that, he's lying through his teeth, whatever it is. We dismiss a lot of this. The foreign standpoint, when you start looking at the United States, when the president does this, even if it is Donald Trump, do foreign countries dismiss this the same way that maybe we might, saying, that's just the president mouthing off?
Well, you know, I mean, they're still sophisticated. So, I mean, they're going to look at this and their people will recognize that Donald Trump will say something and it will be an absolute lie. They know that. The problem is you don't know exactly when that is, and this isn't, again, simply a negotiation in the sense that this is not just about $1 million or $1 billion. this could be something far more catastrophic as a result. And in fact, what we're talking about right now is negotiating and playing chicken back and forth with the Russians involving very serious weaponry and our willingness to potentially kill each other as a result. This is not something minor. And so it's really, really easy to take something out of context. It's very, very easy to miss something and to actually believe potentially by somebody that he's actually being serious. And the problem is you don't know that. But again, when you're talking about people dying and about the sort of domino effect that can happen, I mean, just remember, this wasn't that long ago where there was that firefight in Syria between American forces and Russian mercs, where multiple hundreds of Russians were actually killed as a result of that. And there's a lot of questioning as to why that actually happened. There are still bad feelings about that in Russia. I was in country at the time when that was going on. And as a result of that, I think there's still a lot of people talking about what that means.
You talk about playing chicken with the Russians. And I that so much to me sounds like Cold War rhetoric. I mean, did this happen with the Soviet Union during the Cold War that we played chicken with them? And obviously there's the Cuban Missile Crisis, I think, of that comes right to mind. But was this something that regularly went on?
Well, we did do this. I mean, in a lot of ways, if we think historically, and one example is you can talk about the Cuban Missile Crisis, but what that ignores, unfortunately, Americans get a sanitized version of history and they miss a lot of these issues. It sort of ignores what the Americans were doing in Turkey, just on the southern corner and the southwestern corner of the former Soviet Union, was doing essentially similar things with weapon systems pointing into the Soviet Union. And so, yes, there was chicken back and forth, but frequently when it was being done through surrogates. You know, we were constantly fighting each other through surrogates. We had our peace, we had our government we were supporting versus they had their government that they were supporting. The problem that we're facing with this one is literally direct. I mean, this is face-to-face. Now, what we do have in place is we do have a communication system in place right now, ideally designed that if U.S. forces and Russian forces are both flying or operating in Syrian space, that they can be in contact with one another to make sure they don't actually touch upon one another, that they don't inadvertently take out one another mm-hmm. when we're trying to do something else. But the problem we're talking about here is this isn't about that. This is literally the president saying, they're coming in, we're going to take them out. We have Russians in response saying we can take them out and hit them at their source, meaning the Americans at their source. And so when you start seeing rhetoric like this, you have to start questioning what's going on. And I think what's critically important is that there needs to be reasonable players at the table. And what I've been seeing is you're not seeing reasonable coming out of the White House. And I mean that legitimately. One simple analogy, or at least one example of it, is in this apparent trade fight that's going on between the Americans and the Chinese, purposely put together by this president. If you take a look at who the reasonable people in the room are trying to like calm things down, it's President Xi. It's the Chinese president. It's not the American. It's not this president. And the same thing seems to be going on with the Russian issue right now in Syria.
You know, Trump seems to want to have it both ways. He keeps saying, I am the toughest president ever on the Russians, which I think a lot of the press snicker at, thinking about a lot of things that have happened in the past with other presidents. But then he also says, we have great relations with Russia. We have great relations with Putin. I mean, is it safe to say right now that U.S.-Russia relations are at the lowest point since the Cold War?
Yes. Without question, they are. I mean, actually, the president said they were worse than the Cold War. That isn't true. But if you go back to at least the 90s, certainly with the fall of the wall and sort of the relationships, which were actually shockingly close for a period of time, this is worse than anything we have seen in a good 15, 18, 20 years, for sure. So there is no doubt there. But again, if we look at this president's behavior, and again, this is something I am not seeing in the media right now, and it should be in the media. One of the reasons that this shocking attack that the Damascus regime actually carried out against its own people took place, I think, is partly due specifically, in fact, to this president saying, we're pulling out of Syria. This idea that the Americans are going to walk away from this issue, walk away from the region completely and simply let it go, what that does is that gives the perception from the Syrian point of view that all bets are off. They can do exactly what they want. And sadly, that's exactly what has happened, because what you're seeing right now is the Syrian government, the regime out of Damascus, has been in basically mopping up operations, taking huge swaths of territory back from ISIS and other groups, and then targeting those other groups and crushing those other groups, including the Kurdish groups that the Americans were supporting and the Americans have walked away from. And so this sort of extreme behavior by the Syrian regime is due in part to this president's statements, which came completely out of the blue, even to the Pentagon, about we're going to be pulling out of Syria. So he bears some responsibility for that, and yet nobody seems to be calling him on it, and I don't know why.
Well, I think the press has asked Sarah Huckabee Sanders about it a couple times, and she's just sidestepped the question, saying that, oh, the bad actors here are the ones that are responsible, the kind of response you might expect. But Trump has been, again, running his mouth, and that seems to be the problem. He's violating his own principles here by saying, I'm not going to telegraph what I'm doing. First, he telegraphs that we want to pull out of Syria, and then he telegraphs saying the missiles will be coming. Does that compromise the mission if Trump sends one, and could that backfire on us?
Well, it's interesting because, actually, Trump was criticizing President Obama for telegraphing his behavior in Syria. And he went after him really aggressively on exactly this, right? I mean, he did.
Right.
So the idea that he's going to turn around and telegraph his behavior is, it's interesting. I mean, that's the hypocrisy of it, of course. The idea in general is that you might want to telegraph your behavior if the purpose is to change somebody else's response or their behavior, as essentially, this is a threat that we would like to pull back from, but we want to lay it out there so you know it's coming, so maybe your behavior will change. But the problem is when you look at how this president tweeted American foreign policy in 128 characters, the way he did it, the problem is it doesn't give room for anybody to change behavior. It basically is a 10-year-old boy with some really expensive toy that he's going to come around and show everybody and show how cool he is. And that's what this is. This doesn't do anything positive to put the Americans in a better position. It simply apparently is designed to make Trump feel better about himself. I'm not really sure. That's really one of the things that I think a lot of people at the Pentagon right now are scratching their head about.
Yeah, the Pentagon, from a military standpoint here, are they... What should they be concerned that Trump has said this and that might really screw up the mission? I mean, I'm sure there's a contingency plan, you know, for just about everything sitting there. Does this change it? Does this make it more risky for the U.S. to do something like he's proposing?
Yes, Mike. I mean, it's a great question, because in the end, the problem that we have here is we have a president who's decided he's going to go down his own path. He's not listening to his experts. He's not listening to his military personnel, his diplomatic personnel, his intelligence personnel, because he decides that viscerally he knows more than everybody else. Why? Because he's Donald Trump. Not because he actually has the information, not because he knows the players, not because he knows the intricacies of the game. He doesn't know any of those. He's just deciding that he knows because he knows. That's about the equivalent of saying that America is the best country on the planet, not because the stats say that it's not because there's something that can prove that we are, but because it is. It just is because it is. Well, guess what? That isn't good enough when it comes to that concept. It certainly isn't good enough when you're talking about being the leader of the so-called free world to be able to simply do what you do because you're you. There's a real problem when that's actually where we have come.
We're speaking with Jack Rice. We're talking about Donald Trump, obviously, Syria, Russia, missiles, all that kind of good stuff. I tell you what, Jack, we're going to take a break because there's a couple more topics I want to get into after the break. I want to talk about the raid that happened on Trump's lawyer, and I know you've got some interesting observations on that. And then we had the announcement today that Paul Ryan is not running for re-election and what that might do to politics in Washington, D.C. You're listening to Jack Rice along here with Mike McEntee on The Mike McEntee Show on AM 950. We'll be back in a few minutes.
So hold my hand, I'll walk with you, my dear. The stars creak, ashes...
Turn to Auto Technical with your vehicle donation. Even though Auto Technical is a small nonprofit, we have helped more families with transportation than any organization in Minnesota. Since 94, we have reconditioned donated vehicles so they have a higher tax benefit. Call Richard at 612-919-5526, 612-919-5526, or autotech.org.
The fine folks at Common Good Books will help you find the perfect book for you or the book lover in your life. Find a huge selection from a locally owned and independent bookseller in the Twin Cities. They are always bringing in top authors from around the globe for special in-store events. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Find Common Good Books at 38 South Snelling Avenue in St. Paul or shop online at commongoodbooks.com.
Hi, it's Tom Hartman. You know, Continental Diamond is special for a lot of reasons. The owners are Jimmy and Helene Pessis, a husband and wife team who had a dream to open their own store more than 30 years ago. They've built a business that is the gold standard. The readers of Minnesota Bride Magazine have named Continental Diamond the best jeweler for the last 7 years. Why? Amazing, friendly, no-pressure customer service, a selection of fine diamonds and design jewelry unlike anywhere else, and the fresh-baked chocolate chip cookies are pretty great, too. Continental Diamond in St. Louis Park and at ContinentalDiamond.com.
Downtowner Woodfire Grill in St. Paul is a perfect choice for breakfast, lunch, and dinner 7 days a week, offering daily fresh seafood specials, fire-roasted meats, exquisite pizza, and half-price bottles of wine on Mondays and Tuesdays, except on Xcel Energy Center event nights. Once you experience their cozy fireside dining, extensive wine list, and bar, you'll be back for more. Gift certificates available, located at 253 West 7th Street with plenty of free parking, or online at downtownerwoodfire.com.
I backed my car into a cop car the other day.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show. We're having a great conversation here with Jack Rice. We've been talking about the big stories that are going on. Syria and Russia, we just chatted about. But the other big story that, of course, broke this week is the one that where Trump's lawyer, Trump's personal lawyer, was his offices and home were raided by the FBI. Trump reacted to this quite angrily and was promising all sorts of things that would happen because of it. Jack, I'd like your reaction to A, the raid there, and B, the way that Trump reacted to it.
This is astounding. I think the fact that the president reacted at the level that he did, dare I say this, reflects just how serious it is. When I first heard about it, what I thought to myself was, I've seen multiple investigations taking place, Mueller's, but this one, frankly, is not Mueller's. It's something else.
Right.
Everything is relatively peripheral to the president. This is about as close to the inner circle as you're going to get. This is as close to the president as anything has touched anything at this point. To go after Mr. Cohen, he's been his personal lawyer for more than 10 years. He's been heavily involved in not just the election process, because there's a lot of allegations out there back to 2016 and 15, even as the election was starting to ramp up, but long before that, including a bunch of business dealings in places like Moscow, in the Republic of Georgia, in Baku and Azerbaijan, some of the other areas of the world that I think could be very troubling to this president. And there's one big point that the president kept jumping up and down about, saying that the attorney-client privilege is dead. Let me be clear. First of all, it isn't. And number two, and most importantly, the attorney-client privilege does not exist if they're committing crimes. That's the issue that I think is on the table right now, and that's the issue that could open this up. Because remember one point, one of the first people indicted and one of the people convicted during the Watergate scandal was President Nixon's personal lawyer. That's critical to remember.
That's right. Is there something here that they might find that might be an impeachable offense for Trump? I mean, that's what a lot of people are wondering. I mean, this seems to be about other things.
Here's the thing. Is we got to understand one piece of this, is that impeachment is not a criminal procedure. It's a political one.
And right,
so
I understand.
Is there, frankly, there may technically be, if you wanted to push it out, there could be something already in the works when it came to that issue based upon the president's behavior already. Now, is there more potentially out there? Let's let the investigation come to an answer. But that's a political question. And at this point, it seems clear to me that because the Republicans control the House, there will not be impeachment, no matter what you see, unless it's so horrific that the Republicans have decided that if I continue to hold on to this president, he's going to pull me down. It's not about what the president does. It's not about what happens to the country. Dare I say it, it seems to be, according to the behavior of the House members, that if I'm going to lose my election, then I'm going to have to look at this differently. Now, I guess the question is, are there indictable offenses? Could the president be indicted for behavior that he was involved in allegedly prior to his becoming president? The answer to that is yes. There are civil cases that are sitting out there that are still opening up that actually give those civil litigants the right to depose this sitting president just the way that President Clinton was deposed back when he was president, which ultimately rolled out in the blue dress. That was the issue they started going after him about, was this obstruction piece, his lying to investigators, his lying to during depositions. I mean, dare I say it, the process is still early. It may seem like this has been going on for a long time, but civil litigation, criminal investigations that are international and complex in scope, this is going at breakneck speed, but we can say one thing. Bob Mueller and his team are probably the best on the planet. They know how to do this like nobody has probably ever done this. And if they come up with something, it is going to be airtight.
Now, one of the targets of Trump's ire has been Mueller. He's been denigrating him on Twitter again and again. The question comes up is, you know, if you don't like him, why don't you fire him? His White House press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, says that he can. The president thinks he can. Can he?
We are talking about this sort of at the break, you and I, and the short answer is yes and no. I mean, technically, what he would have to do is he would have to have the working attorney general, assistant attorney general, deputy attorney general, who's in charge right now, fire him himself. So in other words, what would likely happen, and this would be my expectation at this point, if he tried to fire Mueller right now, he couldn't do it directly because technically he wasn't the one who appointed him. It would have to be done by that person at Justice. So he would have to have somebody at Justice who would be willing to do this. But the problem that comes with that is that generally these people are career professionals. And the idea that you would actually fire somebody who at this point has already indicted 19 people, he has 4 convictions, he has multiple operations, and the people who work for him are literally the best the Bureau and Justice may have ever produced, ever, and they're all working in the same room. And the problem is the person who's going to be in that spot to fire Mueller at Justice, that person will know all of them. And so the idea that you're going to fire that guy, I think, would be not just political suicide, but potentially historical suicide, in the sense that you don't want to be on the wrong side of history. And the president may actually have a hard time finding somebody with that kind of experience, capability, and connection, and in senior positions at Justice, who wouldn't do this. Because I don't mean to keep going on, but remember this piece. the whole Cohen piece as an example. What happened was Mueller apparently came across a piece of evidence that may have been outside of the Russian investigation. He went to Rod Rosenstein at Justice Department. The Justice Department went to New York in the Southern District of New York, went to the U.S. attorney, who actually recused himself because he was a Trump appointee and supporter, who said, you know what, we should make sure somebody independent does this. It bounced back to Justice. They took that to the FBI and to a judge to get search warrants, and those warrants were issued by an independent judiciary. And so what we have is a lot of people who are really good at what they do, who were professionals and were serving this country and sacrificing their life when this president was on Howard Stern talking about grabbing all sorts of things. Those people are starting to see that they need to outlast this president, and I think they're starting to turn when it comes to those issues.
Now, a little bit ago, we were talking about impeachment, and you were saying, of course, it wouldn't happen with this Republican Congress unless something catastrophic happened. But some signs today that this Republican Congress may not be long for this world. Paul Ryan, the House Speaker, decided that he is not going to run for re-election. His heading for the exit kind of signals that the 2018 elections are probably not going to go the Republicans' way. What's your take on what he's doing and jumping out right now?
You know, it's a great question. And actually, you started the segment earlier on sort of about a lot of people are starting to make predictions here. I think it's going to come down to one point, whether the Democrats show up. It depends upon who shows up, because what we're seeing right now is that there are more Republicans who have decided to, quote unquote, retire this time around than any time since at least 1952. So we're going back now, you know, 70 years just about. And that's an extraordinary number of, quote unquote, retirees. At the same time, you're seeing the strength of liberals, progressives, Democrats who seem to be emboldened right now. And the question is whether they're going to show up. I think there's a lot of Republicans who are feeling pretty dark about where they are right now. But let's see what happens when they show up. When the election takes place, remember, there's been so much gerrymandering across the country. There are multiple cases in the Supreme Court, North Carolina, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, others, that have manipulated the votes so essentially Republicans can win at almost any cost. It's going to be very difficult to flip more than 20 seats in the House of Representatives. But of course, and this is maybe the major point, is that the only way likely that this president would ever be impeached is if there's a democratically controlled House of Representatives, because they're the one who start that process.
Now, one more thing on this. I know we got to go, but this has already set off a power struggle within the Republican conference in the House. We got the majority leader, Kevin McCarthy, and the majority whip, Steve Scalise, both looking at the chop job. And rank and file Republicans are debating whether it'd be best to have a race now or let it linger until November. I mean, I look at this and say, this could really be this could be a soap opera backstabbing thing that happens between now and the elections and could be a real distraction for Republicans between now and then.
Well, I think the other part that's going to be really interesting here is when you take a look at both of these potential new speakers. This could be like the primaries when it comes to Republican primaries. They may both be fighting to the right in order to grab that base. The real question that's going to happen when you watch this fight between these two is that this is going to show who's controlling the Republican Party. Are these Trump people, or are they more conservative, traditional Republicans? And I mean fiscal Republicans, international Republicans, domestic Republicans. That's going to be the interesting point, because they're trying to figure out how they lead the Republicans into the primaries or into the midterms. And that's going to be really interesting. They've got a lot on their plate. But you know what? I mean, They took the presidency. They control the majorities in both the House and the Senate right now.
We've been speaking with Jack Rice, always an enlightening conversation. You can find more of what Jack writes over at jackrice.net. Jack, I appreciate your time today. It's always great to talk with you.
We certainly pack a lot in.
Yeah, we did. All right. Well, I'm sure we'll have more to talk about next time.
Yes, sir.
We're going to take a break here, but when we get back, the other big story that's been going on the last couple of days, Mark Zuckerberg testifying in front of Congress. Some people have described it like a 5.5-hour tech call from your grandfather. We'll be talking to somebody from Mother Jones, a reporter who's been watching this all go on, A.J. Vincennes, next year on the Mike McEntee Show.
Psst. Yeah, you. It's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa. What happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just going to keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
All right, everybody in the car, let's go.
What are we going to do first when we get there, Mom? Go for a hike?
Sure.
What about canoeing? Can we go canoeing too?
I don't see why.
How long does it take to get to the forest?
It's not that far, sweetie.
Are we there yet?
Yep, we're here.
Already?
It's a short drive from your neighborhood to your naturehood. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a neighborhood park or green space near you. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Forest Service.
Genocide, lost language, rape, isolation, forced assimilation, colonization, assault, disease and torture, school, lost sexual family, abuse, relocation, lost customs, allotments, hate, reservation. Fear.
History has taken its toll on our families. Our fathers and grandfathers, our mothers, our grandmothers, they didn't deserve to be raped and abused. I don't deserve to be raped and abused. Today I walk with pride. I'm reclaiming my body, my heritage, and traditional customs that value all living things. I'm learning healthy boundaries, and I stand with Minnesota Indian women to end sexual violence. Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Welcome back to the Mike McEntee Show. It may have not been the highest rated program on TV this week, but it sure had a lot of people watching. A lot of people in the room. A lot of people wanting to see Mark Zuckerberg get grilled by the Senate and then by the House. It's been going on for 2 days. It's been going on for hours and hours. And finally, it's over with, at least for the moment. One person who's been following it all of this has been while this has been going on is A.J. Vincennes from Mother Jones. He joins us now. Welcome to the program, A.J.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Good to have you here. I mean, the big question that was circulating around this was, why did our data go, you know, to Russia and cause all these political problems in the election? And what are you doing about it? What did we learn about that? Anything in this definitively in this hearing?
Well, the big reveal from Facebook really came a week ago when the company acknowledged that indeed, this app that a Cambridge researcher had created was able to gather data on upwards of 87 million people, and then he sold that data to Cambridge Analytica, a data mining firm who pitches their wares to political campaigns and others around the world. So they got the big news out a while ago. So there was no big reveal here at the hearings. I think really this was, like most congressional hearings, a chance for politicians to look like they're doing something, anything, against the boogeyman of the moment. And for sure, Facebook fits that profile.
There obviously were a lot of Democrats as well as Republicans in the room in both of these hearings. I heard a lot of posturing, a lot of I'm going to read my statement to you, Mr. Zuckerberg, and then you get to say something in response. But was there a definite, there seemed to me be a very definite difference between how the Republicans were approaching this and how the Democrats were approaching it. Explain that to me and how that's going to manifest itself in any kind of legislation that we might see out of this.
Well, you're exactly right. The different approach here was that the Democrats seem to think that much more stringent regulations need to be put around companies like Facebook that deal in consumer data, especially at such scale. And the Republicans seem to be most concerned with the allegation that Facebook leases and suppresses conservative viewpoints and faith-based viewpoints on its platform. So the Republicans at times were even telling Mark Zuckerberg that he should be ready for an attempt by the Congress to create regulations, and that they were almost sort of coaching him through that a little bit, trying to tell him to clean up his act the most that he can before the big bad Democrats come and do it for him.
Now, one of the things I know was raised during this was protection of privacy of data, as you talked about regulations. Zuckerberg even said that he welcomed some regulation into the industry. Europe is putting on some very strict privacy laws that could serve as a model here in the United States. When that was brought up today, what was the reaction on that? What do people think about those types of things?
Well, you're exactly right again. So the European model basically gives users much more control over their data, how it's used, how it's shared between companies, and ultimately, if the user would like to pull that data back, they would be allowed to do so in a much more straightforward manner. Mark Zuckerberg seemed open in general to, I think he's conceding that some regulation is necessary and probably inevitable here, but he said time and time again that details matter on these questions, and he was trying to be very careful about committing to anything specific while sounding like he was open to some sort of regulation. He agreed with the Republicans when they would say things like overregulation stifles innovation, and there was actually a photo an Associated Press photographer took of his notes yesterday during one of the breaks, and one of his talking points about data regulation was that overregulation of American companies would put us behind companies in places like China. So he never ended up uttering that talking point, mm-hmm. but you can tell that they've thought through this and they're ready to fight regulations if they go past a certain point.
Now, I've heard a lot of people say, I'm quitting Facebook. I'm going to get out of Facebook because I don't like what it's doing. It's sharing my data or, the horrible things that have happened since then. The problem is there doesn't seem to be an alternative to Facebook. Zuckerberg was asked if you have a monopoly. He cited a lot of different apps that are out there, but I don't think that he ever said that there was a company that did everything that Facebook does that is really a competitor to them. What's the competitive situation there?
Well, I think, he points to things like email and maybe perhaps Snapchat as ways other people stay in touch. But the issue here is that Facebook is obviously the big kid on the block, and they've, for instance, tried to emulate and consume part of Facebook's Snapchat's model. So they're trying to take that over. They purchased Instagram. They purchased WhatsApp, a messaging platform that's popular around the world and increasingly in the U.S. And so, really, Facebook has no true competitor at the scale at which they operate. So even Lindsey Graham, a Republican who your listeners are probably quite familiar with, seemed to be hitting at the point that there really is no competition here of any real significance, and that might be a problem that Congress needs to address.
Now, I was watching, obviously not consistently like you were, but I would drop in and see a couple minutes and then have to run off to something else. And it just seemed to me that a lot of, especially the senators yesterday when I was watching, didn't seem to really understand how the whole social media business worked. Somebody described it to me as watching your grandfather make a 5.5-hour tech call to somebody to try to understand how their computer worked. I mean, were people that unsavvy, or was it is just a couple of folks that were seeming to ask strange questions?
Well, it seemed like a couple of folks were asking strange questions, but generally, and you know, to the point here, the confusion about what Facebook actually does allowed Zuckerberg to say, to push back and say, we don't sell data. Technically, he's right about that. They don't sell data. What they sell is access to its users' data in the sense that they have this platform that matches advertisers to users. Now, Mark Zuckerberg will say that Facebook does the matching on their end and allows advertisers to target users on a very granular level without actually exposing, your personal data to a car dealership or whoever happens to be buying the ad. But to a lot of people, that's a distinction without a difference. Somebody has this data, and up until, you know, a couple years ago, there were apps that people could design that would pull that data from Facebook, and then that data is out in the wild, and we see what happens in that situation. When you look at what happened with Cambridge Analytica, that data gets out, and Facebook no longer has control of that data. And he said he was forced to admit repeatedly during the last couple of days that they really have no idea how many Cambridge Analyticas there were on the platform up until 2014, 2015. So, yes, there was some confusion about what Facebook does, but it allowed Zuckerberg to dance a little bit and avoid some of the real distinctions there.
Our senior senator here, Amy Klobuchar, is one of several senators who have sponsored a bill, an act that would require social media companies like Facebook, like Twitter, and Google to reveal who is buying the ads, just as they do when they're doing it on TV. It seemed like not only was that embraced by Zuckerberg, but he said it's in the works, and he said it was going to be even more transparent than television. Did you get the details on that? Does that sound right?
So he's right about that in the sense that they have, in recent weeks, have announced changes to their platform that would allow anybody to see any ads that a particular group is running in terms of elections. So maybe a campaign buying ads or a group buying issue-based ads around elections. You know, a user theoretically will be able to click on that group and see which advertisements they're running, how they're running the ads for different audience segments. You know, the idea being that there will be much more transparency about who's paying for the ad and how they're crafting their messages to different audiences. That is in the works. The company says that the tool has been tested in Canada, and they're planning to roll it out soon in the U.S. and around the world where other elections are going on.
Now, of course, when you have a hearing like this, a lot of people get to posture and get to say things. The question is there any action that's going to happen? Obviously, Senator Klobuchar's bill is one piece of legislation that's moving along. Is Congress going to do anything here? And is Facebook going to do something even faster to prevent something more from Congress, some more regulations?
Well, it's hard to tell at this point, but I get the sense that Facebook realizes this is a significant problem for them. As representatives and senators on both sides of the aisle told them, they've really chipped away at trust here. And I think even Mark Zuckerberg, on top of his sort of gilded throne here, recognizes that. We'll have to see whether they actually how they have these conversations with Congress about what the regulations look like. There are several bills, you know, the one you mentioned. There are bills that have to do with user data. It's a little bit of a hodgepodge of an approach, and I would imagine that that's going to solidify a bit and become a bit more organized, and then we'll have to see how Facebook reacts. But Zuckerberg was making it clear that he is open to having the conversation, but really, you know, it's hard to take what he says, you know, truthfully without any follow through, because he's made claims time and time again that have turned out to not to be true.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, because you get a lot of rhetoric and a lot of talk, but then when the dust settles often on these things, there's not much that has been done. We've been talking with A.J. Vincenz. He's the reporter for Mother Jones. You can find more of what he writes over at motherjones.com. I can't recommend the site I recommend it very, very highly, because they are a great independent source of media. And A.J., we really appreciate the job that you're doing.
Hey, I really appreciate you having me on. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you again, AJ. We'll see what happens here. We're going to take a break here, folks. And when we get back, we want to turn our attention to the Minnesota legislature, what's going on there, and also your phone calls. If you got something that you want to comment about that we've been talking about, 952-946-6205. You're listening to the Mike McEntee Show here on AM 950.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
Who's your most trusted companion? Who's with you 24/7? What do you never leave home without? Your phone. But the screen is shattered. Don't panic. Bring it to Computer Revolution with cell phone repair. We have over 18 years experience fixing computer devices, all brands, all carriers. We'll replace that screen and have it back same day. Computer Revolution with cell phone repair in Roseville at Highway 36 in Fairview. Or call 651-633-6600. We fix phones. Same day. 7 days a week.
Tap Taste and Treasure at Vinaigrette, where we have some warm seasonal recipes all ready to create dynamite meals. Our fig balsamic vinegar pairs perfectly with roasted Brussels sprouts or baked brie. And sweet potatoes are always a winner, but never more than when they're roasted with a drizzle of vinaigrette cinnamon or orange-fused extra virgin olive oil on top. Come in today for more custom-crafted food and cocktail recipes at Vinaigrette, 50th and Xerxes in Minneapolis and 287 Water Street in downtown Excelsior. Online at vinaigrettemn.com.
With spring, it's car wash season. Thank goodness for the Luther Advantage program from Rudy Luther Toyota. Not only do I save 10 cents off per gallon of gas at holiday station stores, but I also get big discounts on car washes. And with free 2 years of maintenance with every new Toyota purchased, I can get my oil change and spring service done with the best service and maintenance department at Rudy Luther Toyota. Clear your spring checklist with great service from Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169.
Hey, Mike McEntee back with you here on AM 950. The Minnesota legislature is chugging along. Another deadline getting here very close. But one of the bills that's been kind of languishing, actually for the last year or two, has been a bill that's cracking down on cell phone use by drivers. Well, it got passed this time in the Minnesota Senate Transportation Committee, passed on a voice vote. It heads to the Senate Finance Committee, putting it one stop from a floor vote. This is a bill from Senator Jim Carlson of Eagan. It would bar the use of phones by drivers while a car is in traffic unless an emergency or a hands-free mode is employed. A similar bill has been advancing in the Minnesota House, has the support of Governor Mark Dayton. Just a note, though, studies have shown that hands-free conversations are also distracting to drivers. It's a step forward on this issue, but it doesn't solve it. Some people still, even when they're on the phone on a hands-free operation, are distracted from what they're doing. And we have way too many deaths in this state right now because of distracted driving. A little bit of good news here I wanted to pass along. Small and rural school districts throughout Minnesota, because of budget cuts, often only have one music teacher educating hundreds of kids, which can be difficult for the teacher, but it also puts limits on music education in the district. That's why the McPhail Center for Music's online school partnership has rapidly expanded. It's offering remote learning at a low hourly cost to districts. We get more on the program from Elizabeth Brown.
Remote learning to enrich rural and less well-funded school music programs. The McPhail Center for Music's online school partnership program connects districts with singers and musicians who teach classes remotely. The center has partnered with schools in the Minneapolis area for about 30 years, but now uses teleconferencing tools like Skype to reach far-flung school districts. Sarah DeBrelbis with the McPhail Center says it has online partnerships with about 30 school districts.
From Carlstadt, Minnesota in the northwest portion of the state, all the way to Silver Bay across on the east side.
DeBrelbis says grants from the State Arts Board, Otto Bremer Trust, and private donations subsidize most of the program cost, so schools only pay $20 an hour for the remote classes. She says keeping the cost low is important, as the program is only meant to supplement on-site music education, not replace it. Schools can arrange individual or small group lessons for sections of their orchestra, band, or choir. DeBrelbis notes that teaching music online does present some challenges.
Well, I can't, you know, adjust finger placement or something like that on an instrument or do demonstrations or play live at the same time with a student just because of some delays.
She adds there are 12 districts on a waiting list for the online music education program. I'm Elizabeth Brown, Minnesota News Connection.
And here's some other good news. The Twins today, Max Kepler got a walk-off home run, and the Twins got past the Astros. So that's good news story sports-wise, number one today. The good news story that we're hoping for is the Timberwolves are playing tonight, and it's kind of a one-game playoff. Even though it's the last game of the season, I think it's against the Denver Nuggets. And if they win, they go to the playoffs. If they don't, well, it's another crummy season from the Timberwolves. And this is the final thing. Again, I want to mention this because it could really screw up your weekend. We are possibly getting a foot of snow this weekend. That is the possibility that's being raised here. I think it's going to start on late Friday and Friday evening, and then into all snow on Saturday. So if you are planning travel this weekend, you may just want to have a plan B. It could be that we get 6 to 12 inches of snow over much of central Minnesota. We could pick up here in the Twin Cities, plowable amounts is what's being called. So maybe my statement that we are going to get a foot of snow might be off, but some models show that it could be that much. I am ready. I'm not sure about you, but I am ready for the end of winter. And what is today? Today is January 102. Yeah, I'm just keeping track here because it sure still feels like January. Okay, we'll be back tomorrow. Norman Goldman's up next. We'll see you then.